It's Wednesday, April 8th, and welcome to Higher IQ. Last night, with less than 2 hours to spare before a deadline he set himself, President Trump announced a 2-week ceasefire with Iran. It came after a day in which he warned that a whole civilization will die tonight. And it was brokered not by the United Nations or a European ally, but by Pakistan. If you've been following this conflict in fragments through push notifications and headlines that seem to contradict each other, you're not alone. We're going to walk through how we got here, who wants what, and what this ceasefire actually means. This conflict has roots that go back decades, but the immediate chain of events starts in late 2025 when massive anti-government protests erupted across Iran. Driven by economic crisis and years of repression, they became the largest demonstrations since the 1979 revolution, spreading to more than 100 cities. The Iranian government responded with force. In January 2026, security forces killed thousands of protesters in what multiple human rights organizations have described as one of the deadliest episodes of state violence in modern history. The exact death toll remains disputed and may never be fully known because Iran imposed a near-total internet shutdown during the crackdown. The U.S. responded with threats. President Trump encouraged protesters publicly, warned Iran's government to stop killing its citizens, and began the largest American military buildup in the Middle East since the 2003 invasion of Iraq. At the same time, indirect nuclear negotiations between the U.S. and Iran were underway in Geneva, mediated by Oman. On February 25th, Iran's foreign minister said a historic agreement was within reach. 3 days later, the U.S. and Israel launched coordinated strikes across Iran. On February 28th, in an operation the U.S. codenamed Epic Fury and Israel codenamed Roaring Lion, nearly 900 strikes hit targets across Iran over 12 hours. The strikes killed Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, along with members of his family and dozens of senior military and intelligence officials. They also killed approximately 170 civilians when a missile struck a girls' school adjacent to a naval base near Bandar Abbas. The stated objectives were to destroy Iran's nuclear infrastructure, eliminate its ballistic missile capability, and remove its leadership. Iran retaliated immediately. Hundreds of drones and ballistic missiles were launched at Israel, at U.S. military bases in Bahrain, Jordan, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE, and at oil infrastructure across the Gulf. A drone struck a British base in Cyprus. Hezbollah launched rockets into Israel from Lebanon, triggering a parallel escalation that has killed more than 1,400 people. Iran closed the Strait of Hormuz to Western Allied shipping, choking off roughly 20% of the world's seaborne oil trade. Global energy prices spiked. At least 13 U.S. service members have been killed and approximately 140 wounded. Inside Iran, Khamenei's son Mojtaba was appointed as the new supreme leader despite international objections. Ali Larijani, a senior official who had been managing the crisis, was killed in a strike on March 17th. The Iranian government has cycled through wartime leadership while maintaining that it will continue fighting. The IRGC, Iran's powerful paramilitary force, has consolidated control over decision-making. Since the initial strikes, the war has followed a pattern of threatened escalation, postponed deadlines, and incomplete negotiations. Trump set a deadline in late March for Iran to reopen the strait. It passed. He set another in early April. It passed. Each time, the rhetoric intensified and the deadline moved. On Tuesday morning, Trump posted that a whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again, if Iran did not agree to a deal by 8 p.m. Eastern. He threatened strikes on Iran's power plants, bridges, and civilian infrastructure. With 90 minutes to spare, Pakistan brokered the deal. Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, who had been acting as an intermediary between Tehran and Washington, announced that both sides had agreed to a 2-week ceasefire. The terms, the U.S. and Israel would suspend bombing. Iran would reopen the Strait of Hormuz for safe passage. Talks would continue at a summit in Islamabad on Friday. Why Pakistan? Because it's one of the few countries with working relationships on both sides. Pakistan shares a border with Iran. It has a large Shia population and long-standing diplomatic ties with Tehran. It also has a close military relationship with the United States and receives significant American aid. Neither the UN Security Council nor the European Union was positioned to mediate, in part because the US and Israel hold veto power at the UN, and because European nations have been divided on the conflict. Pakistan stepped into a gap that no one else could fill. Both sides are claiming victory, which is what happens in a ceasefire where neither side has achieved its full objectives. Trump wrote that almost all of the various points of past contention have been agreed to. Iran's Supreme National Security Council said nearly all the objectives of the war have been achieved, and released a 10-point proposal that includes lifting all sanctions, releasing Iranian assets held overseas, U.S. withdrawal from regional military bases, compensation for war damages, and Iran's right to nuclear enrichment. These are maximalist positions. Whether they represent genuine demands or opening bids in a negotiation is one of the central questions of the next 2 weeks. There are already contradictions. Israel says the ceasefire does not include Lebanon, where its military continues to operate against Hezbollah. Pakistan's prime minister says it does. Iran says safe passage through the strait will require coordination with its armed forces, which is not the same as unconditional reopening. There are reports that Iran and Oman plan to charge transit fees of $1 to $2 million per tanker, which would amount to a de facto toll on the world's oil supply. The U.S. military has ordered all offensive operations to cease, but what happens if Iran's conditions for strait passage are more restrictive than the U.S. expects is unclear. The markets reacted instantly. Oil prices plunged roughly 16% overnight, with U.S. crude falling from $117 per barrel to about $95. The S&P 500 futures surged nearly 3%. The Dow jumped over 1,000 points. Japan's Nikkei rose 5%. South Korea's Kospi gained 7%. The logic is straightforward. The Strait of Hormuz carries about 20% of the world's seaborne oil. Its effective closure since late February produced the largest oil supply disruption on record, roughly 12 to 15 million barrels per day removed from global markets. Oil prices had risen 65% since the war began. The ceasefire raises the possibility that those barrels come back, but the relief may be premature. Even if the ceasefire holds perfectly, the physical logistics of reopening a global shipping corridor take time. Insurance companies pulled war risk coverage for tankers transiting the strait weeks ago. Getting that coverage reinstated, rerouting ships, clearing backlogs, and resuming normal flows could take weeks or months, not days. Gas prices at the pump, which hit $4.14 nationally on Tuesday, may start falling within days if the ceasefire holds, but diesel and jet fuel will lag longer. And food prices, which have climbed as energy costs ripple through supply chains, won't reverse quickly. One UK industry group warned that some of that damage is already locked in, regardless of what happens next. If the ceasefire collapses, the picture gets considerably worse. Before the ceasefire, the Dallas Federal Reserve modeled what a full quarter of strait closure would mean. Oil at $98 per barrel and global GDP growth reduced by nearly 3 percentage points. That model assumed a single quarter of disruption. A longer closure or a resumption of strikes on Gulf oil infrastructure would push prices back toward or above pre-ceasefire levels and raise the probability of a global recession. Europe, which depends heavily on energy imports, would be hit hardest. Asia, which receives the vast majority of Gulf oil exports, would face potential fuel shortages. What to watch? The Islamabad talks on Friday. Whether oil actually begins flowing through the strait in the coming days, whether Israel continues operations in Lebanon, and whether the two-week window produces a framework for something lasting or simply delays the next escalation. Every previous deadline in this conflict has been extended. This one may be too. So if this comes up in conversation, here's how to think about it. The U.S. and Israel struck Iran on February 28th, killing its supreme leader and triggering a war that closed the world's most important oil corridor. Last night, a 2-week ceasefire was brokered by Pakistan with 90 minutes to spare. Markets surged, oil dropped 16%, but the ceasefire is conditional, time-limited, and already disputed in its scope. The next marker is Friday's talks in Islamabad. Whether this is the beginning of a resolution or a pause before the next escalation depends on what happens in those 2 weeks. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.